Hi, welcome to today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and we are going to try to match the pace and the sheer ferocity of the Monday Night Football game last night in this podcast. So if you want to make comparisons, I guess Spike can be the Rams, I'll be the Chiefs, and we're just gonna have the best most exciting podcast you can ever imagine right now. But in all seriousness, I'll do a quick intro. It's Grant Goldberg. I am the co-host of this Locked On Seahawks podcast, and I do social media and graphic design work for SB Nation's Lakers site. Spike is a writer with The Stranger. And Spike, if you had to compare yourself to one of those two teams, are you more Rams or are you more Chiefs?
Oh man, that's tough. I think that I'm a little more Rams in watching the three good teams in the league, which are the Saints, Rams, and Chiefs. Three good offenses over the last week. I sort of feel like the Chiefs are like majestic. The Rams are like too smart for their own good. And the Saints are just like unrelenting. And if I am at my best, it's my brain that's getting me there. I'm not unrelenting. I relent all the time, constantly relenting. I'm not athletically majestic. If I'm winning, it's winning because I'm scheming. So I think I'm more the Rams than the other two elite offenses in the league. What about you, Grant?
If I had to pick one, probably the Chiefs, because I like to take shots. I take chances a lot, and sometimes it turns out to bite me in the ass. And then when it comes to defending myself, sometimes I'm just a revolving door, and people just do what they want. But I feel like that's a tough question, because all three of the teams, because you mentioned the Saints, are just a clear tier above the rest of the NFL. Maybe you can add the Patriots, maybe you can't. I feel like it's tough to talk about yourself in that kind of sense. Not that we either clearly deserve to be talked about, but I feel like when you're put on the spot, you can't just clearly outright say, I'm like the Chiefs or Rams of like whatever I want to do. So I don't know.
Let's be real. I'm a Jacksonville Jaguars of my life. My own life, I'm the Jaguars within it.
Yeah, I'm a little more Vikings.
Jaguars is such a depressing choice. I don't even believe that about myself. I'm like, move on. Let's get out of here.
Let's move on to
the Seahawks of my life, baby. The Seahawks, the underrated Seahawks.
Yeah, I'd say they're underrated. But the most pressing news to date for the Seahawks: JD McKissick returned to practice. He has not returned to the 53-man roster. They still have a couple weeks where he can just practice and then he can be activated, or they can choose to send him to the IR for the rest of the season. And it brings up an interesting dilemma for the Seahawks, whether they add him to the 53 and somebody loses their roster spot. And I think the person most in danger for losing his roster spot is CJ Procise. It's a really, really full running back room. It's gone to a three-headed monster in the backfield with Chris Carson, Rashad Penny, and Mike Davis. Procise has been really factored out of the running back equation. And so, if they're going to add another running back, I don't think it would make sense to add a fifth running back. And, I think that costs Procise's job, which, I think it's, not to say that anybody losing their job is a good thing, but I think it's warranted when you're just looking at it from a roster construction standpoint. You just don't want any redundancy, and you don't want, you want as many versatile players around your roster, and, just adding another running back on top of that equation and taking away depth from another position when you already have, a full running back room. I just don't see the case for cutting anybody besides CJ Procise.
Yeah, Precise hasn't been consistently active this year. I think he's only got like two touches in game. Like he's been used very sparingly, and his advantage is obviously his pass catching out of the backfield or his ability to split out wide. Both of which are things JD McKissick can do, and both of which are things that other Seahawks running backs are being asked to do, even if they're not as good as CJ Procise at that specifically, because they're more versatile. We've seen, for better or worse, both Rashad Penny and Chris Carson at various points lined up out wide. So CJ Procise is not necessary for this team. I wonder how that competition is going to go, how Pete is going to judge that competition, but definitely one of those two dudes are in competition for that last running back roster spot. I think that's pretty clear at this point. And yeah, I mean, that's life at the back end of the roster. It's tough.
Yeah, and I think one thing that McKissick has going for him too is the ability to contribute on special teams. We don't really see Procise make an impact or really take the field on special teams. Maybe I'm not watching that closely, but
No, you're right.
yeah. And so, McKissick is a guy that gets in there on returns, he gets there on coverage, and so Pete really values those guys. And it's just another dimension that McKissick has in his game that Procise doesn't, because we mentioned how their skills are a little, are similar. They do similar things out of the backfield, but adding that extra dimension for McKissick only has to improve his chances at, staying, getting on the 53-man roster instead of, being put on the IR for the rest of the season.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And yeah, and like we've had Nico Thorpe being a little bit hurt, the team has gone down to some of their second choices on special teams. So being able to bring JD back into that role will only help a special teams unit that is so much better than last year's. I mean, we haven't talked about it a ton outside of Michael Dixon, which we've obviously talked about a ton, but this is a top 10 unit in special teams. And obviously the Seahawks want to be even better than that, but given where they were last year, falling down into the 20s in DVOA and special teams, seeing, John Ryan's skills degrade a little bit and having obviously a nightmare situation to kicker with Blair Walsh, this year having Sebastian Janikowski be average to slightly above average, pairing that with Dixon being one of the top few punters in the league, and a return and coverage unit that are both pretty solid, we're in good shape as a special teams unit. But again, we've had the injuries on the roster that have thinned that out. Might as well have McKissick there to maintain that high level of special teams play.
Yeah, anytime you can get a player with McKissick's speed on the field, you're gonna be in a little better shape than having a slow guy, obviously. I
Yeah,
mean,
they're not going to like throw me out there
yeah,
or
no,
Ethan Posick or
we
something.
talked about that. No, you're gonna use your brain. Maybe you're gonna do the scheming for the special teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we're not gonna
I'm
blow any.
coming for your job, Brian Schneider, just so I can hang out with Michael Dixon all the time.
Michael Dixon talked about Brian Schneider on the Seahawks Driving with G on YouTube,
Oh, yeah?
and he talked about how they instantly clicked at his pro day, and he's made the transition super easy for Dixon coming from college to the NFL, which I can imagine is super tough, given that he's had to make a big adjustment already coming from Australia to go into college. And so Dixon was talking about how he was super happy to be drafted to Seattle because of that connection that he had to Schneider. And so now I know that we've been critical of Schneider in the past, and that was due to injuries and John Ryan's declining performance, and some of that falls on Brian Schneider. But I'd safely say that he's really bounced back, and then hearing those small details like developing instant chemistry with Michael Dixon, it just kind of it improves my thoughts on him as a coach. And it makes me feel better about the special teams unit, not only from an on-field standpoint, but just knowing that the players support and like their coaches. I don't know, it just
Yeah.
makes me feel good about the standing with the team.
Yeah, and I think we were sort of calling for Brian Schneider to maybe get fired at the end of last year. I thought he did a worse job than Darrell Bevell last year alone, but that's a lot to do with the Blair Walsh situation. And in terms of the actual kicking, That's just a huge question mark as to how special teams coaches impact that. And we from outside the organization can't really know. The scheming wasn't there last year either, but a lot of that was just the kicking wasn't good enough last year. We've got new kickers in, the kicking's better, and voila, the schemes are better too. So, these are the sort of things you just can't know from outside the organization. You can speculate. And when it's Blair Walsh, you can speculate that everything is broken. But in this case, it seems like things were not totally a disaster zone. They just needed to get tweaked in terms of just replacing the kickers involved.
Right. It's really, really hard to speculate and guess what's going on. From a standpoint of two people that have tried to do it relentless. No, we're relentless in trying to speculate what's going on with the Seahawks internally. But you know what's easy, Spike? It's
Taking
e
a quick break.
It's easy to take a quick break and then
Woo!
listen to more of the Locked On Seahawks podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. So stay tuned for more of us speculating.
Guys, are you ever cold? It's winter, or it's becoming winter. It's late fall, it's autumn, it's the holiday season. You could very well end up cold.
Yep.
That's what happens. You're living in Seattle, it's cold out. Even if you're living in Southern California, it could get cold. If you're living back east or in Minnesota, I don't know what you're doing, but
You're already cold.
it's too cold. And that's why this episode is sponsored by Action Heat, the world's best battery-heated clothing. Heat on demand at the touch of a button. You can take control of your environment with Action Heat. Become a god of warmth. Action Heat clothing is engineered to safely and efficiently deliver heat via heating panels similar to a heated car seat. How good is a heated car seat when you're cold? It's so good. That's what Action Heat is, but all over your body all the time. Those panels, they can reach 135 degrees. They're rechargeable batteries, so you're not making any waste. They last up to 12 hours on each charge. And the Action Heat batteries, they can be used to recharge your phone if you're on the go. And you're warm enough already, but you're low on phone battery, you can call that Lyft from your Action Heat clothes. It's perfect gift for a friend or family on your holiday gift list, for anyone who works outdoors. You got skiers, snowboarders, people who love the outdoors or just live in Minnesota, buy them these clothes. They got jackets, socks, gloves, hats, undergarments. You can stay warm and cozy from head to toe with Action Heat, and it's men's and women's. So it doesn't matter how people are, get them Action Heat. Just do it. And now we are talking about the promo code. What do you think we're going to be able to do for you? We're talking with products that start at just $39.99, and we're going to knock 20% off with the promo code Locked On. Go to actionheat.com/lockedon. Save 20% on Action Heat clothes. That's actionheat.com/lockedon. Save 20%. Stay toasty warm. Don't be cold. Actionheat.com/lockedon. Action Heat. The only way to stay warm.
And we're back with more Locked On Seahawks on the Locked On Podcast Network. You're still with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman, and we're gonna do some more speculation, and we're gonna bring you that speculation via our favorite reoccurring segment on this show. It's Carrollology. We're gonna take some stuff Pete Carroll said and try to find a deeper meaning in it. So Spike, we're gonna look back to Thursday night after the Seahawks Packers game. And Pete Carroll had some interesting stuff to say, some funny stuff to say. So, why don't you start us off with our Carrollology for today?
Yeah, a big one that I'm looking at is how he's talking about the linebacker position. Obviously, Bobby Wagner's incredible. Barkevious Mingo's been playing well, but sometimes you got to throw out three linebackers. And we're not throwing out Shaquem Griffin. KJ Wright's hurt. Michael Kendrick's suspended. How does he feel about Austin Colitro? And I'm going to read what Pete said, and then we're going to get into this. He said, Austin did a nice job. He's played enough football now, and he's the next guy to go in at that spot. He's the most experienced guy, and that's really what gives him an advantage right now. He's a good ball player and doing some nice stuff, but he's the most experienced guy playing the spot, so we feel like we can get the most consistent work out of him. Shaquem keeps, he's banging, trying to get in there too, but that's the way we've decided to go. This doesn't sound like Pete Carroll being super enthused about what's happening at that linebacker spot.
Nope.
No, it does not. And you could see it in that Packers game that some of those handoffs just weren't quite right in coverage. Packers are able to do a lot of things offensively that Pete did not enjoy seeing. And what this makes me think is two things. One, Shakeem is going to be limited to special teams for the rest of the year. That is fine. He is a fifth-round rookie, and he's making a huge impact on special teams. Pete's psyched about him. Shakeem's not going anywhere. We're fine there. The other thing is, how big is it that we get Michael Kendricks back for that Vikings game?
Oh, huge.
How big is that? Because the Seahawks need to win either the Panthers or Vikings game. Ideally, they win both and we just like go to the playoffs. That'd be amazing. But they have got to win one of those two games. Having Michael Kendricks back for that Vikings game against a Vikings team that really struggles to run the ball, has not been great integrating Kyle Rudolph in. I mean, and it has a guy in Kirk Cousins who throws tons of huge pressure picks in primetime games. Having a coverage linebacker like Michael Kendricks and they're a versatile piece like Kendricks, it's going to be huge. And so for me, Pete is just not enthused about what's happening at that linebacker position. You can hear it right now when he says things like he's the most experienced guy over and over again. Experience is not, you know, Pete loves competition. Pete wants the new guy to be better. So
Yeah.
that is not telling me that Pete is enthused about what is happening at linebacker outside of Bobby Wagner and Barkevious right now.
Yeah, definitely. It's that, but he's the most experienced guy at the end. That's, the really condemning thing for me about the linebacker spot. And like you said about Shakeem, he's a fifth round pick, and I think that we didn't really talk about Shakeem when we talked about the special team contributors. We talked about Nico. We talked about J.D. McKissic and what he could bring. But Shakeem Griffin's been there all year, and he's been making the impact. He's been getting down there on special teams coverage. I think right now, at least, it's the best way to utilize his speed as a player. He's a little bit like a puppy when you put him out on defense at the linebacker spot. He's excited and he brings the energy, but sometimes it puts him in the wrong spot.
Yeah,
And
especially in the run game.
yeah.
Especially in the run game where those run fits that Pete has devised are so precise. You just can't get them wrong.
Yeah. And sometimes you overcommit. Sometimes you just end up getting burnt off of it. And so yeah, I think with experience it'll come for Shakeem Griffin. We have a l he has a long time to get in that starting spot. But yeah, Michael Kendricks coming back is going to be huge. But let's go back to that Packers game and a super questionable decision throughout every football fan's mind when Mike McCarthy decided not to go for it on 4th and 2 with Aaron
Yeah,
Rodgers.
I've got the quote ready to go from Pete
Let
on
it
that.
rip. Let it rip.
So Pete was asked if he was relieved that they punted. Pete goes, and with a laugh, "I don't know if I was relieved. I really did like that they punted the ball to us right there because we knew we had a shot to kill the game if we could, kill the clock, and we did it." And then, excuse me, he interrupts the next question. "The thing about that that's important is our belief in the running game. We get the ball in that situation, we're like, oh, here we go. This is our time." Thrilled to see that happen. The mentality, it's coming around. It's great to see that happen. So, and he's right. The Seahawks have been running the ball really well against the Packers all night, and Mike Daniels was out. Like, the one dude who was stopping the run inside was hurt and out of the game. The Packers, if they punted the ball away, were screwed, and Pete knew it. And I love that he like doesn't want to throw Mike McCarthy under the bus, but he like almost cannot help himself, and he felt the need to go on at length. And it's just like we've talked about how Pete's a liar on this podcast a little bit before, and that he lies by being super optimistic. In this case, when he says, "I don't know if I was relieved," I think he's telling the truth because I don't think it was relief that he feels. I don't know if Pete Carroll knows the emotion of relief. I think in that moment, he's just like, "Oh, baby!" Like he's just ecstatic rather than relieved. So for me, in this case, Pete is weirdly telling the truth, even if the reporter was clearly trying to get him to throw Mike McCarthy under the bus. And Pete didn't quite do it, even though it doesn't take a master Carrollologist to see that he was very much questioning the decision-making of Mike McCarthy in that moment.
I feel like Pete Carroll, no matter what the situation is, always has a certain outcome or result in his head and is super disappointed depending on what happens when it doesn't come to fruition. That's why we see all of these crazy reactions on like egregious holding penalties or like really bad defensive pass interference penalties, and Pete Carroll just looks absolutely livid and is really questioning what's going on. That's because he always has the perfect scenario for that play in his head at all times, and so we get these great reactions. And so I think we saw that a little bit more when Mike McCarthy did not go for it on fourth down. And you made the point about Mike Daniels, and you know it's really smart that the Seahawks decided to exploit that missing piece in the Packers defense. But I don't know if I can credit them for being smart for that, because you know if history is gonna prove anything, the Seahawks were gonna run the ball either way. Just the sheer amount that they're gonna run it. That's just depending on where Mike Daniels is in that defensive line. But yeah, it's great for them to exploit that hole in the Packers defense, and it's great that the Packers refused to go for it with Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Jones, who looked really explosive at times during their game against the Seahawks. So I think that'll do it for the Carrollology segment of the show, unless there's a secret quote that I was not aware
Nope,
of.
that's it. That's it for Carolology this week.
All right, so we'll come back with more Carrollology. Maybe when Pete Carroll speaks next, maybe next week. We'll keep you guessing on that. So stay tuned for the last segment of the show. So more Locked On Seahawks on the Locked On Podcast Network. And we are back with the final portion of today's episode of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. You are still with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman. And we came to the stunning realization that it'd be a bad idea to do a show on Friday. We're going to give you guys an extended Thanksgiving break from our Locked On Seahawks podcast. And we'll go ahead and pick the Seahawks Panthers game live today on the show. Spike, you know, we've gone back and forth, depending on how tough this game is going to be. And, you know, this game is obviously huge playoff implications, like the past few games I've had for the Seahawks. And so, what are you thinking for Sunday's game with the Seahawks and Panthers at 10 a.m. in Carolina?
That Lions game against the Panthers, man, their inability to defend the run, the Seahawks' willingness to just pound teams that are unwilling to defend the run, unable to defend the run, makes me really optimistic. I think the big question is how much is DJ Moore going to be able to hurt us? Like the Panthers' receiving core and Christian McCaffrey, their passing game's really good this year. North Turner's doing a really nice job on that side of the ball, but their defense is bad. And we've seen the Seahawks team be effective against teams with decent offenses and bad defenses. I think about the Lions and how well we did against them. So I think the Seahawks win this game, even though it's on the road, even though it's at 10 in the morning. I just think they're trending in the right direction. They came out of last week relatively unscathed injury-wise. Rashad Penny's slight ankle is the only thing on the post-game injury report. So for me, I'm going 22-19 Seahawks.
I just think the Seahawks are way too effective on the ground. Luke Kuechly, I think is
Way too effective. Wow, Grant is hooked into the juice.
I am fully, you know, invested in this running game. And this is like, and I did not expect to say that, you know, at the start of the season. I was totally forget the run, going all in on the pass. But you know, the Seahawks have shown really, really great stuff on the running game. But I was going to say, Luke Kuechly, I think, is going through a similar thing that Aaron Rodgers is going through right now. He's
Oh.
not a bad player by any means. He's still a good player, but he is not that, you know, game-changing player right now. He's not what Luke Kuechly has been in the past.
Yeah.
And so, no, I think that's a big thing for the Panthers that they're missing. And it's going to allow the Seahawks to have really good success running the ball. And I think they'll be able to win this game. It's going to be a close game. It's going to be one of those ugly Carolina games. I think we're going to see the Seahawks win 17 to 12.
Whoa, yeah, that's a real throwback garbage game.
Yeah, the Seahawks, it's going to be frustrating. They're going to be able to do it though. I believe in the Seahawks. If you asked me a few weeks ago, when the Panthers were up like 35-7 on the Bucks, then I think you're going to get a different answer. But then the Bucks decided to come back. The Steelers decided to, absolutely whoop them on Thursday Night Football, and then they lost to the same Lions team that the Seahawks beat. In the same place. So, I think I'm a lot more confident going into this game than I was in the past, and I think the Seahawks win it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just going to be a little more high scoring because, again, the Panthers aren't quite that team they used to be. That's why I'm like up 5 points on each side of the ball from you. But and really, that just comes down to me not hating North Turner's offense right now and really being impressed by how well teams have run the ball against Carolina. I'll put it that way. James Conner and then Kerryon Johnson in back-to-back weeks sort of demolished them on the ground. So I'm hoping Rashad Penny and Chris Carson can do something similar. But yeah, this is cool. All right. Well, you're not going to be hearing from me until after the game next Monday. You will be hearing from Grant tomorrow on an excellent crossover episode with Locked On Panthers, which is a reminder to listen to all the podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. Great NBA podcasts. Follow the Locked On NFL stream. Follow them on Instagram. I feel like there's a lot of good Insta content right now from Locked On NFL and Locked On NBA. Great college stuff. Locked On Wolverines, if you're a Michigan fan. It's good. I don't know that you're a Michigan fan, but I'm like, hey. So I think we still need Locked On Huskies. So someone should get on that. And yeah, leave a 5-star review. We will answer your question on the air if you do that.
Yeah.
Is there anything I'm forgetting? I didn't check the reviews today, so it's possible that I'm lying. And
Nope.
so you fit it. Nope. You
Nope, we
checked
don't
them.
have any new reviews. The last
Come
one was
on.
on November 11th. Go to Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, there's an old one from Phil Edry who I met a couple times in Seattle, and he's a fan, so we're loving it. But that's from like last year.
Yeah.
So,
No,
anyway.
the Locked On Seahawks podcast is absolutely timeless. So any reviews from last year that are really glowing about us, they're still true. But add to that. Go ahead, ask your questions, add your compliments, do whatever you want in those Apple Podcast reviews. Talk to us on Twitter at Grant Goldberg, at Spike Friedman. The show's handle is at Locked Seahawks. We always appreciate getting to hear what you guys think about the show in any capacity. And so I think that does it. Spike mentioned Locked On Wolverines. They have Joel Klatt on the show.
That's right. That's who it was.
And so, yeah, he's going to be calling that big Ohio State Michigan game. So go ahead, listen to that if you want a little more insight on one of the bigger college football games this weekend. But yeah, thanks for listening, guys. We appreciate it. And so for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, I am Grant Goldberg signing off.
Yeah, I'm Spike Friedman, also signing off.